Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. I thank you for joining us. And my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Bob Brinson.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
And Mom Marilyn is still here. And we've got the puppy dog also, so we have a full house. So.
That'll explain the panting noise. It's not any of us.
It's not any of us.
Awesome.
And we have, as you heard, we have Senator Bob Brinson with us. Thank you for joining with us, Bob.
Not a problem.
Appreciate it.
Now, I'm going to ask some questions, as long as you're here.
Okay.
Now, you're a native of New Bern.
I am, yes.
And other than traveling the world with the Army, you have been here. You grew up here. You come back here.
Yes.
You're a new senator. You've been appointed because Jim Perry stepped down. What do you see as some of the things in Craven, Lenoir, and Beaufort County, which is the area you're representing, that you think need to be addressed?
Well, some of the things that I have on my agenda, and of course that agenda gets longer every day as I meet more people, but essentially what I've talked to our representative Steve Tyson about a couple of times is reducing early voting.
Yay.
As you kind of alluded to, this is gonna be my third election in 3 years, and 20 days of early voting is exhausting.
And expensive.
Looking from a candidate's perspective, yes, exhausting.
Candidate, yes.
But also, as you point out, from the county's perspective, it is expensive. And now, even this year, all three of the counties that I'm representing have expanded the number of voting sites that they're going to have open early. And so it was already difficult enough to get enough people to, I say volunteer, they are paid positions, but get enough people to work those positions for 4 polling sites, and now we have 5 in Craven and Lenoir. I think Beaufort County, they had 3, and I think they have expanded as well. So the issue is that burden goes to the county to man the sites.
Yes.
To man the sites and pay for, and it's hard to recruit people. And so I think that even if we were to cut it at least in half, I'd like to see probably a week, maybe Saturday to Saturday, you'll be able to recruit more people because here's the defined space of time. And you'll get better quality people to do it as well. And so that helps with voter integrity.
You talking about poll workers?
Yes.
Okay.
If I might interject, though, in addition to the paid part, it is the volunteers.
Yeah.
You have to get poll observers, yeah, electioneers, and obviously as a candidate, your time investment, the volunteer part. So it's the whole thing.
Can I add another point? If you're doing early voting, the candidates are winding up after early voting has started. Like right now, we don't know what Kamala stands for. So if you're early voting, you're cutting out part of the electioneering.
That's by design.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and to your point, absentee ballots, if you've requested an absentee ballot, those are going to get mailed September 6th.
Yes.
So that's less than 3 weeks from now. And early voting starts in North Carolina on October 17th. So, it's not a whole lot of time.
To go back to the election issues with so much early voting, they're really long days as well. And there's no such thing as a split shift. So I work the polls as a judge or as a worker, whatever is needed. And I'm typically the youngest one there, and I'm 65.
And that's a long day even if you're a young person, that's a long day.
Yeah.
Okay, right. What else?
And then it's a great thing. I'm here this afternoon, like I was telling you earlier. This morning I met with probably about 25 farmers, representing about 25 farms, they wanted to talk to our elected representatives. And so there were representatives from Senator Budd, from Senator Tillis, and Congressman Murphy there, because typically the aid comes from the federal level. But just wanted to let people know there was about 30,000 acres represented in those 25 farmers. And the numbers that they put out was from the Farm Service Agency. In our southeast North Carolina, 94% of the corn crop is lost, yep, and about 25 to 30% of the soybeans, and then all other crops were about 30% lost. That's your tobacco and others. And essentially that came from the 6 weeks of drought we had right at the beginning of planting season in June. And then we started getting rain in July and then an even wetter August. One farmer said he had 32 inches of rain in the last 30 days. And so they are hurting.
Yes.
And so they had gotten together to see what the federal government can do. Now, at the state government level, we have to wait and see what the feds do. And then also, you know, what I let them know is essentially the business of state government's over with, essentially, for the year. There are some things that we're going to go back and do at the end of the year, but we wouldn't be able to help them this year. We'd start on the budget next year. But really, just listening to them, they had a tough year last year, an even harder year this year. And so now they're worried that corporate farming essentially is going to take over from all of our family farms.
From the family farms, yeah.
That are in our local district. So that's something that I really want to dig into and try and figure out. I mean, you know, my mother is from rural Craven County up in the Cove City area, had a grandfather that was a farmer. So I remember while I lived in New Bern, you know, I would go out to the family farm and play in the fields and, you know, pick corn and have a in-ground barbecue pig, you know, those sorts of things. So that those are the types of things that we need to protect and pass on to our next generations. There, one of the farmers there actually said, he said, we are 1 to 2 generations from losing all of our family farms.
And, you know, as you're talking, Bob, you're mentioning the farmer themselves. But again, there were a number of hired hands that they had no reason to hire this year. So that's that doesn't help any employment.
No.
And the other part of that, too, when you talk about losing the family farms, is that this tax proposal that's in the DNC platform to tax unrealized capital gains, because the family farmer who may have paid $15,000 for his farm 50 years ago can't afford to pay a 25% tax on the increased value of that farm.
That's absolutely crazy.
And I would just say that if you want to see it real time, just drive out Old 55, Old 70, and you'll see what a 90% corn crop loss looks like.
Yes.
And it gives me goosebumps. Farmers are the biggest gamblers in many ways. Unintended gamblers, but they don't have control of many things.
That's
and
true.
Coming from a farming community,
and
it's devastating.
It also opens the door for the solar farms and wind farms, because the family farm, if they can't make it farming, they're looking at how they can lease their land and get some money out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, Bob, as you had mentioned earlier before we got on the air, if you go out that Route 55 and you see the corn crop up to about 4 foot, that's all that is leaves. There's nothing else.
Yeah, there's no corn
on
it.
It's brown.
And to me, I mean, you got to think about it. Okay, well, where does our corn crop go? Well, you know, over 90% of it is hog feed for here, you know, or chicken feed for here. So that's another kick up on the prices for your meats. And people don't realize that, most of that corn doesn't go to the market as corn for you to buy.
Or the ethanol corn.
That's
minimal.
That's minimal. So, you know, again, that kicks up inflation for other places.
Well, maybe we'll have price controls.
That'll work. Look what it did to Venezuela. Yeah.
Okay.
And then one of the last things, well, there's two more things, I guess. One is the article I actually wrote for you or for CCTA in the County Compass talking about veteran mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, the state has or runs five veterans homes, and I really should say four because they closed one because of structural problems and delayed maintenance and that sort of thing. They actually moved everybody out. But essentially, they're contracted with Pruitt, and Pruitt runs the homes for the residents. And so while they have some procedures, if there are medical emergencies and things like that, they don't have procedures for a mental health crisis, which, you know, that's an acute problem. But it for me, it doesn't take into account that they're not having mental care at all there. You know, acute problem is something that basically builds up. But so a veteran that goes into a mental health crisis, they have two options. They basically refer them off to the local economy, the local hospital, who generally doesn't have mental health either. So the veteran is either sedated or restrained or both until they can get a involuntary commitment orders to take care of that veteran. And so I want to dig into that. I want to, you know, figure out, can we contract for mental health out of those homes, or can we make one of those homes an inpatient mental health facility? And so that's kind of what I want to dig into. And then one of the things that didn't get done this year was the mandate for sheriffs to work with ICE. Mm-hmm. That bill is still hanging out there, and I'm told we'll probably go back for some voting sessions after the election. And so that's one of the ones that I want to check on.
That's what Chip Hughes talked about last night, that he's part of the, 287G program where he works with ICE, and he was saying that Wake County, Mecklenburg County, all those counties, their sheriffs don't work with ICE, and so those illegals can go wherever they want. Yeah. But if they're caught in our county and ICE puts a detainer on them, they're shipped back.
Right. And so there are sheriffs in North Carolina that refuse to do that.
Yeah, there's some of the sanctuary sanctuary counties.
De facto sanctuary counties.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I'd like to figure out where that bill is and see if we can get it moving again.
That's a good one.
I think it's horrible that we treat our illegals better than we treat our veterans.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters again. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thanks for staying with us.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Bob, you wanted to continue a little bit, or were you getting forced into continuing?
Well, yeah, well, no, I mean, to continue the conversation, you know, what we are talking about is sheriffs in, well, not just in North Carolina, but any state, when they detain someone, they're supposed to check with ICE to determine if there are any detainers, other crimes that are out there. And so if there is a detainer, then ICE is requesting the local sheriff to keep that person incarcerated until ICE can either pick them up or adjudicate something against them.
Without bond.
Without bond. Now, the counterargument from these de facto sanctuary counties, that sheriffs that are not
cooperating
with ICE detainers is, well, you know, we've detained them on a separate crime, which a judge has either given them no bail or this person has posted bail, and so we have no longer have any authority to detain them.
One of the other things that was added in the explanation that we heard from Chip was that if they're charged with being an illegal within the country and they're given a court date, it's 2 to 5 years out into the future. Yeah. So that means they've got free run for 2 to 5 years.
Right, right. And what we're alluding to is the CCTA meeting last night where Sheriff Chip Hughes got to speak and talked about this topic.
And the percentage that actually show up for their court date is something like 20 or 30%, if that.
And the economic impact on our cities is great. It's not just any government assistance. It's that we're educating these illegal children. And I would like to see something done where the schools are allowed to say, you can't come to school here, you're not a citizen. Our Constitution says that every child is entitled to an education, but the assumption was that the children were Americans, North Carolinians. It never intended it to be. And I think if we clarify that, think of the money that a county could save if you weren't giving services to people who broke the law to be here.
And were more difficult to educate because they're of a different language. Now, if they're here properly, there's part of that that we should support. But when it's illegal, it just makes no sense.
Yeah. There's also another aspect when you talk about the veterans. The Veterans Administration has been used administratively to help some of these illegals with their health care needs. That costs money. I'm sorry, when you're taking an hour or two away from a clerk's regular job, somebody's paying for that, and it's coming out of the VA's budget. That's wrong. We need to get back to helping our veterans, getting our priorities in order, and asking people if they want to come to America to do it legally. Hmm. You know, we need to gain control of our southern border. One of the things that was said by Sheriff Chip last night was that our southern border is now controlled by the cartels. That's not a good place for us to be in. That is simply not acceptable.
You know, well, again, silence is deafening. But also, one of the things that was mentioned last night was that if the illegals come across our northern border, the Canadian border, where it's considered a terrorist act, I believe, as I'm trying to figure out how he worded.
I think he said terrorist act. I think he said terrorists were coming across.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Terrorists. Thank you. Terrorists were coming across the border is the way it was phrased. However, any of the illegals coming across the southern borders have not been painted with that same threat.
The other part of that's interesting is when you look at America's northern border, securing that is a mess because it's long, it's woods.
It's wilderness, yes.
It is wilderness. I mean, you can go from Vermont to Canada accidentally walking through the woods. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what has happened in some places in the northern border, New York City now has a reputation for being really good to illegal immigrants. They give them all kinds of debit cards, hotel rooms, and whatever. So you've got Ubers and taxi drivers sitting at the Vermont border driving people to New York City. I mean, it's a lucrative business. They know they'll get paid when they get there.
To the point you made just a minute ago, 15 states are suing the Biden-Harris administration for enrolling non-citizens in Obamacare.
Yeah.
So I don't know what other topics you were wanting to share with Bob, but at the event on Saturday, which was a candidate event focused on schools, you shared a perspective that I support 100%, and that was related to social workers. I've been pressing our local school board or county commissioners to say that social workers should be the county. We don't need to have them as employees. You talked out in support of that direction, your own position, but it aligns with mine. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I would. And essentially, it comes down to what's the difference, and this is kind of the argument is, you know, what's the difference between nurses in schools, psychologists in schools, and social workers in schools? You know, you got nurses, so you've started down that path. But essentially, I see a nurse's role in school very differently than a social worker and a psychologist. A nurse there is a day-to-day type triage, you know, of, hey, do you have a doctor's note to come back to school? Are you contagious? Or, you know, do you need to go home now? You know, I mean, that's more immediate.
Or did you fall off the seesaw?
You fall off the seesaw. Our statutes don't delineate roles and responsibilities between those three people either. And there is a push, I think, from the leftists to make our schools to be a one-stop shop for everything children.
Yeah.
And putting social workers and psychologists behind the veil of the school further alienates them from their parents and continues to take them down the road of taking away parental responsibility and parental decisions. And so, but I will acknowledge that there is a need for, there is a youth mental health crisis. And, you know, there is, parents do work during the day, both of them most of the time, and don't have time to deal with some issues of taking care of their children, you know, so you need social workers. So, but my perspective was, yes, there is a need, but they don't need to be in the school. Parental responsibility being one, but second being our administrators in the school do not have the expertise, both, leadership-wise, I hesitate saying that, but, you know, that's the truth. But also, managing healthcare providers. They don't have that expertise and they can't do that. And so I think we should be on a referral model. It should not be housed in the school. And if it's something that we have to create, because one of the arguments that I have heard, particularly from our county DHHS, is they don't have the bandwidth to deal with children. My argument is we've never forced them to before, and so they've never had to, and so they don't have those resources. And then psychologists, you know, particularly child psychologists, particularly in our rural counties, they just don't exist. Mm-hmm. And so going back to the idea, the model I was talking about with our veterans' mental health, we then use that as a template to either establish or contract out regional mental health centers for youth or contract with practices that will do mental health. Because the issue is, you know, and it goes back to my idea of the purpose of government as well, you know, a free market, people will build the businesses and get the jobs that will support whatever the need is. But when you come to mental health, that takes a lot of time and a lot of money, and you may not get that back as a region. And so that, to me, is when the government has to step in and take the risk and establish that. Whether they keep it or not is another decision. You know, maybe you stand it up and then outsource it, but or turn it over. And I think I've talked enough now.
Well, I want to make a comment on psychology. Put the psychologists in the school, because they'll put lefty psychologists in there. The kid is being indoctrinated at school to become transsexual. They go to the psychologist. Now he makes it official that's, you know, they're sick. That's the solution, which further alienates parents.
And one of the things that happens as well is there's money connected to this. It's just like in the schools, and we found this out when we were fighting against Common Core, that the schools get additional money for every child that is on an individual education development plan. So you've got people who are not qualified making these decisions on the characteristics or the needs of a child that don't have the credentials to back it up, because they get more money.
And that's my thought about IEDs too. Not every school can fulfill the needs of every child. And so, you know, when we talk about opportunity scholarships, those that are on IEDs should have priority as well, so that parents can take that child with an IED with the money that would normally be provided and go to a school that fits their needs.
And I agree with the lack of resources. That's been kind of the discussion here locally between county officials. Of course, the county gets involved in helping funding. They didn't say specifically they went to social workers, but they gave the school everything they asked for. And part of what they asked for did cover social workers. So there's a little bit of a cover story there. But somebody's going to pay for these. They need the resources. They need that service, or we will get into bigger problems. But we do have statute issues, because social workers is in that education statute. I didn't think it was until I dug into it, mm-hmm. and it blew up my case a little bit. So social workers are in there, so we got to root that out.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. We will be right back. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Stop in at E70 Porn for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in Newbern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in Newbern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, Newbern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Bob, we're going back to you.
All right. I'm sorry to dominate the conversation, but one of the last things I wanted to talk about is what's going to be on your ballot this fall. And I want to remind you, it's going to be an incredibly long ballot. I think North Carolina State Board of Elections just passed a couple of more political parties. So you're going to have at least seven sets of candidates for president, which makes it longer. Then you have the 10 councils of state. Then you have four judges at the state level. Then our state representative, senator, and then your local school board, your local...
Sewer and water.
And then judges. I know we have at least eight judges, I think, on our ballot. And then you get to municipal. But the last thing I want to talk about that's going to be on your ballot is a constitutional amendment that basically states only a citizen of the United States can vote in the state of North Carolina. That is on your ballot. If you vote yes to that, then that's what it's going to read. There are just some issues going on. It's like, well, isn't it illegal already for non-citizens to vote? Well, in 1996, yes, Congress made that illegal for them to vote in federal elections. But Washington, D.C., the state of Maryland, the state of Vermont, and the state of California are now allowing non-citizens to vote in their cities and municipalities elections. It's only prohibited in seven states right now, and seven other states have them on the ballot this fall, including North Carolina. And so right now, our Constitution says every person born in the United States and every person who has been naturalized can vote. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, that sounds like only citizens can vote, but the leftists in many of these other states that say something like that are getting judicial decisions that said, well, it doesn't say only. And so that's why the General Assembly wants to close that door and make it very specific. And so that will be on your ballot in the fall. And this is different between voting and registering. There's a whole lot more that we need to close loops on registering to vote, because right now a person can, all they have to do is check a box saying that they're a U.S. citizen, attest to that, and sign their name, and the local board of elections never checks it. The person registering never has to show any proof of citizenship, and so there is some issues that we need to clean up.
Or, Bob, as has been stated, or when you're getting a driver's license, they will register right. you automatically. Or, as we've seen from even a granddaughter, when you go out to college, you can check a box when you go to college, and they will move your registration if you're not registered, or they will register again if you're not registered.
Right. And it brings up, for me, two points. Number one, you know, even you were talking about the vote by the State Board of Elections yesterday and now allowing a digital ID from UNC Chapel Hill.
Even once this, if this constitutional amendment passes, the General Assembly is going to have to create statutes to implement it. But if you don't have a governor that implements the law or an attorney general that enforces the law, you're not going to get things changed.
Like our marriage amendment?
Yes. And or anything for that matter.
How many times did we have to pass voter ID?
Yeah.
Well, we passed it, and it passed. And then they just hung it up in litigation.
In litigation, yeah. And
then they watered it down to appease. And it, frankly, I don't think it's all that great. There's still a lot of loopholes in it. When you look at the identification, the only thing that you're allowed to do is verify that it's a reasonable likeness. Address doesn't matter.
Yeah, statute or the work that's going on with that amendment, will we be also framing in what's expected around cleaning up the voter rolls, verifying it against what do they call it, critical documents and that sort of thing? Will that be embedded? That won't be in the amendment, but is the plan to codify specific expected or required efforts to make sure the list is accurate?
I mean, I would certainly love to do that. And that's where I go back to, you know, a lot of the pressure that legislators are getting from people to clean up the rolls. My thought is there are a lot of statutes that are already there that the State Board of Elections is circumventing because there are governor appointees on there that run the board. And that goes back to what I said. In order to really change it, you've got to get a Republican governor or a conservative governor to appoint people to the board, and then an attorney general that enforce it. So, you know, I go back to, I'm not throwing up my hands, but I'm saying, you know, the legislature can pass whatever statutes it wants, but without a governor to implement them and an attorney general to enforce them, we're really just kind of throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks.
You know, Bob, we also have not seen the actual wording of that amendment as it appears on the ballot yet.
Right, we have not seen
it. And folks, I'm going to say, vote your ballot top to bottom, all the way down, top to bottom. And then secondly, find out what that wording means, because sometimes we get somebody that does some subtle wording, then yes means no and no means yes.
It depends what the meaning of is.
But to your point, Bob, I did read to you what the statute says. And so I figure the wording will be very close to what I gave.
It should be very close, yes.
Okay, Title IX, Pat?
Yeah, I heard comments the other night at God and Country that made it sound like the Supreme Court had ruled on Title IX. They ruled on an emergency injunction request. They haven't ruled on the case yet. And I think the way it was put is confusing. With the Department of Education, the lower courts have instituted an injunction against enforcing the new Title IX rule.
And that's for specific states?
Yes.
Those that participated North Carolina, in the suit.
The states that brought the suit.
And North Carolina is not one of those states.
No, it's not. At any rate, the states brought the suit for, they were given an injunction in the lower courts. The Supreme Court was asked to rule on an emergency application from the Department of Education. And they declined to lift the injunction. Okay, that applies to the states bringing the suit. Because the way it was presented the other night, it made it sound like the Supreme Court made a ruling, a final ruling, that only affects 10 states, and that's not the way the Supreme Court works. So I just wanted to make that clear to people that are despairing that North Carolina is going to be subject to the new Title IX rule without any recourse.
Well, the fact is, though, North Carolina was not part of the legal suit that went against
And once again, why is that?
Because our Attorney General and our governor decided that not to fight it.
Yeah, making Bob's point for him.
But the Title IX did go into effect. So our schools would be forced to, because we are North Carolina, to comply, which does put our children at risk in their bathrooms and in their locker rooms and on their sports teams. So we are at risk, and we need to have parents join the Moms for Liberty group. They are doing a lawsuit where if you have a child in a school, you can join with them, and I don't know what the process is. I haven't looked online.
Well, you just have to become part of that class action suit.
Right, but if you're
for the specific, you have to have standing.
Well, your child has to be in a school that you are trying to do. And I'm encouraged because I saw our school board chairman put out a post regarding that, telling people to join.
Yeah. Well, for people who don't realize that the risk involved, there was a school, I believe it was Loudoun County, Virginia, where a transgender student went into the ladies' room and sexually assaulted a young lady. Rather than deal with it, they simply transferred him to another school where he sexually assaulted another young lady. Not all children are wonderful. Not all teenage boys are moral. Not all teenage girls are moral.
Well, think about it. Think about this. Can you think of a 15-year-old boy who on a bet or a dare wouldn't say, I identify as a girl today, just to get into the locker room?
Oh, yeah.
And the school would cover saying, well, you know, gender is fluid.
Well, there were some stories that came out of the
so silly.
University of Pennsylvania swim team with Leah Thomas about some of his behavior in the locker room. And it was totally inappropriate. And the girls were very uncomfortable with it. And they were told if they spoke out, there would be repercussions. We don't want to put our kids in the position where if they stand up for something that they believe is right, or if they stand up against being harassed in some way, that they're punished for it.
Agree with that.
There's that, the silence. Well, where are we going next?
Amen.
I see a minute and a half on the
clock.
Oh,
okay, I'll go.
Can I comment on the unrealized gains?
Oh, please do.
Oh, yes.
We were talking about that the other day, and apparently it came up at the DNC convention because Mr. Biden was yammering about it. He's still yammering about making corporations and billionaires pay their fair share, and brought up the unrealized wealth tax. Well, according to him, it's supposed to be on billionaires.
Supposed to be on billionaires.
Well, if you tax unrealized gains on billionaires, how do they get their money? They invest it. So if you are cutting their investments out from under them in an attempt to steal their wealth, why would they? What is their incentive to continue to invest? And that's a blow at capitalism.
You're destroying the economy.
Yeah. It's so idiotic. Just like the price controls, their economic platform is so idiotic.
Well, the most idiotic thing to me is the fact that Kamala keeps talking about what she's going to do on day one. Why hasn't she done it yet? She's been in there for 3.5 years.
And yes. There was comments at the convention that I picked up on tidbits that said, you know, hey, we're going to get this thing turned around, and it's been theirs. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Economics. They own it.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
God and Country Christian Alliance's 31st Annual God and Country Banquet is scheduled for Monday, September 16th at the Havelock Tourist and Event Center. Our keynote speaker is Mr. John Rustett of North Carolina Family Policy Council. Tickets are $30 each or $225 for a table of eight. Sponsorships are also available. Visit our website, godandcountrync.org, to purchase tickets. God and Country Christian Alliance's mission is to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern, to restore to all levels of government the Judeo-Christian values upon which the nation was founded, and to encourage and activate pro-family voters. To learn more about us, visit godandcountrync.org. We look forward to seeing you on September 16th. This year, we also have a silent auction. The doors will open at 5:30 p.m., with the program starting promptly at 6:30 p.m. Check us out at godandcountrync.org.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again, and I'm being forced into going to Mary. Where you wanted to go? You wanted to go somewhere.
I just want to make a statement about the class warfare that's going on about taxing the rich. I think a lot of Americans need to realize that the fact that someone else is rich is not the reason that they're not as successful as they want to be. People get rich because they're smart, because they work hard, and because they unfortunately take risks. And if you look at the list of millionaires in this country and the number of times that those millionaires have declared bankruptcy or gone bankrupt because they took risks before they got rich, particularly in the state of Texas where they've got oil wells, if you're unhappy with where you are, find a way to get ahead. Don't try to take money away from anybody else.
And if they didn't have the money and invest the money in businesses, they wouldn't need employees, and the whole society economic system would collapse.
Well, the Democrat platform, let's see, they're going to raise the corporation tax.
Mm-hmm.
The corporations absorb that tax by raising prices,
mm-hmm.
and handing it off to the consumer, but they want price controls.
So you're going to wind up putting corporations out of business.
No, you're going to wind up with short supplies.
Yeah. That's right.
We're not going to make it at a loss. I mean, we've heard of so many companies that it costs me more to make it than I can get for the thing, and I just keep making more and more, which means I'm losing more.
Right,
and
I've read those articles that say we're going to have shortages if they put price controls in effect. And price controls are right out of the communist playbook. And taxing the rich right out of the.
I'm going to go right back to our very first thing, Bob, that we started with, and that was your meeting with the farmers or whatever else. So if we put price controls on corn when we're not producing corn, now this happens to be because of a natural
thing, weather thing.
But if we're putting price controls on corn and we want cheap corn and there is no corn, you're not going to get any corn.
And it goes back to what I was saying, that
Washington Post editorial board just says these are all populist gimmicks, you know, and
they're not even consistent.
Right. And Harris is not being, and Walz is not being vetted.
Is the American voter smart enough to see through the gimmicks?
Most people have no idea how economics work.
And the media is not helping.
No, they don't explain.
And the whole idea of corporate tax increases was already said, but I got to reinforce it. Corporations don't pay taxes.
No, consumers
do. People that buy their products or services pay the taxes.
Consumers do.
Ultimately.
You know, one other quick thing that I wanted to throw in, there was revised employment numbers that show that up to 1 million jobs aren't really there when they talked about the employment gains. The jobs are not really there, and we've lost it over a number of years.
And that came out today, the real number was like a little over 800,000.
Yeah, they came out with a number, and then 2 months later they revise it downward.
Yeah.
So we get the yay on the you know, when it comes out, and then the 2 months later we get no coverage.
Well, and that's the monthly adjustment. This is an annual adjustment on top of those monthly adjustments.
Like,
it's crazy.
It's like when the newspaper runs a story that you know is totally garbage, and then you find the retraction 2 days later on page six.
But you've got the politicians or the famous movie stars, whoever it is, doing the commercial or the talking point saying how they've improved the economy and how it's working and the soft landing, blah, blah, blah. And people that need to see the truth, I don't believe, are going to the sources that are going to give them the truth. If all you're watching is mainstream media, you can't fix stupid.
Well, I think the truth shows up when the voter goes to the grocery store or the gas station, because they can tell you that the economy is wonderful all they want, but when you go to the grocery store and you find out that you have become a really strong person and that you can now lift $200 worth of groceries, whereas before you could only lift about 30. You know, I mean, again, common sense will occasionally meet reality.
Well, there was one other, I believe I saw it go by, that back in about 2020, you needed to have essentially an income of about $59,000 or $60,000 a year in order to be able to buy a house, to be in a position to buy a house. That now you need an income of about $110,000 to $115,000 to do the exact same thing.
Mary, I'm going to argue with your point a little bit. What you said, when they go to the grocery store, they go to the gas station. The Democrats counter that. The left counters that because it's the greedy business that's price gouging. It is not. They never look at it being the policy that caused the problem.
That's true. And unfortunately, a lot of the public is dumb enough to believe that because they don't understand economics.
Right.
We created this mess ourselves with the government spending.
Yeah, but the reason they do that is because they don't think that the rich people created money, created wealth, but that they stole it from the poor man. And that's another trope that the Democrats push.
Well, that would be kind of, you know, when you think about it, that would be kind of an accomplishment because there's no point in stealing from the poor. They don't have money.
But that's why they're poor, because the rich people stole it from them. It doesn't need to make sense, Mary. It just means to play to people's prejudice.
Needs to be a statement.
Just basic class
warfare.
The reason
I'm poor is not my fault.
And the other gimmicks that they do with the forgiveness of the student loans, etc. That's buying votes.
Yes.
You've got these people who now the latest thing is $25,000 towards the purchase of your first house. So it's a way, well, I'm going to elect them. They're going to give me money to help me buy my house. Well, I'm going to elect them. They're going to pay off my school loan.
Yeah.
It's about what are you going to give me?
Yeah.
Instead of how are you going to protect me?
And of course, we don't look at the effect of what inflation has done to our dollars. But
and again, okay, you're going to give everybody $25,000 to buy a house. What's that going to do to the cost of housing?
Raise it.
And maybe by about $25,000.
It's the same thing that's happened to tuition. The more student aid the federal government approves, the higher the cost of tuition goes.
I can remember, and I don't know how typical this is, but I can remember when my kids, back in the age of dinosaurs, when my kids were in college, spending maybe about $8,000 a year for tuition, room, and board in a Massachusetts State University. One of my grandchildren is looking at a college that is $63,000 a year. I almost fell over.
Is that in the same state?
It's in North Carolina. It's University of High Point.
But didn't you say Massachusetts has special support for people?
Well, we found out when our kids were in college that it was, for instance, the technology kid, it would have been cheaper for her to go to Georgia Tech as an out-of-state resident than to go to a Massachusetts university or state college as an in-state resident. And she eventually wound up going to a college that was free, which was very nice, and
well,
I like that.
I went to Old Dominion University in 1969, and the tuition was $200.
Part of this is a shell game, like this extra money for housing and all that sort of stuff, because they know it won't get passed. It can get the vote. It won't get passed, and it won't be their fault. So it's a shell game for trying to manipulate voters.
Well, the Supreme Court said the student loan bailout was unconstitutional, and yet they did it anyway.
Yeah, that one, the housing and the others probably won't make it through.
And see, what it has done to conservatives and Republicans is it has changed the conversation. We are now talking about what they are proposing and how crazy it is, and we've taken the conversation off of inflation, off of illegal immigration, off of the increase in crime, which everybody has felt the effects of and see the effects of, just like we talked about. But now we're talking about how much they're going to give and how crazy that is. You know, so we've got to focus our messages back to where we were. And, you know, I don't presume to advise presidents, but, you know, former presidents on this, but we've got to stay on our message of inflation, illegal immigration, and the increase in crime.
Yes.
And I think we can get there.
Get back to the policies.
Rather than follow the shell, you know, follow the pea in the shell, because you'll never win that game.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
We also have to, I think, work a little harder on educating voters.
How do you get somebody who is just...
Mainstream media is not going
to
do it.
Right, but like I said, we as humans tend to align ourselves with like-minded people. So, like I said before, the message is never going. Our message isn't going to hear somebody that's way left. The best thing that happened so far was when J.D. Vance went out on the tarmac and got the press that was there to see Camilla, because then he could say, "Hey, she's here, but she won't talk to you. I'm here. What do you want to know?"
Mm-hmm. And you know, going right back to Bob's point right now, we need to get back on topic on the policies that need to be in place for success. Because as long as we talk about those peripheral issues, we're not talking about policies. Yeah.
Does the younger generation have a better chance of getting unbiased news because they're on the internet?
No.
Well, I think Trump going on TikTok, even though I hate everything it stands for because of it being the Chinese influence, but I think you got to go where the people are going. So him doing that, I think, is probably a good thing. The social media, I think, is the strongest tool we have right now.
Yeah, yeah. And like going back, you know, inflation, immigration, illegal immigration, and crime, the Democrats own every single one of those issues, mm-hmm. just like we talked about.
And did you notice that the DNC, they put a wall up?
Yeah.
Balls don't work.
Showing photo ID.
Right.
Multiple times.
I'm sorry, also renamed the ladies' rooms all others.
Oh, I heard a little bit about that. Tell everybody what you're talking about.
Well, there's the men's room, and then there's the ladies' rooms are renamed for all others,
unisex?
Which would be the unisex, yeah.
Though they don't have anything that says women's restroom.
I don't think so.
No, they say general neutral.
Oh.
They have handmade signs on them.
So where are the women's livers on that one?
Well, where have they been through this whole transgender thing?
You know, folks, on that statement, we're going to have to end this show. Thank you for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.